I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, hey, welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for all sellers in the UK who work with Amazon to sell their products and make lots of money, and of course create a saleable asset at the same time. Welcome back to the podcast. This is part two of a wonderful interview with Greg Mercer. I'm not saying it's wonderful because of anything I did, but Greg is just a great guy, very knowledgeable seller. He's got about 36 or so products live himself. Also the creator of Jungle Scout, which is the definitive tool for product research on Amazon, and it still is, even though it's been around for about a year and a half or something like that, which in Amazon years is like dog years, is about like 15 years. So it's still the place to go, and Greg is still the man. I'm such a fan already, having just had one conversation with him, and we've persuaded him to come back. Hurrah! So it will be an ongoing relationship for you and the podcast listeners. But for now, here is Greg again. Now, we've got some slightly bigger picture questions. First of all, some quite detailed tactical questions about suppliers. So this is not with your sort of Jungle Scout hat on, I guess, but if you've sourced, you know, 36 products, you will know this from experience. So Ruth is asking a lot of questions about suppliers, so we can whip through these. So the first question is, does negotiating on price ever work much with suppliers, or do you have to increase the numbers to get a discount or to add in extras to get lower prices per unit?
Good question. No, I don't worry about price as much, and this is why. You know, if you're saving, say, like 10 cents per item or, you know, some other small amount like that, it's not really giving you like that much more profit, right? Like if it's a $20 item and I'm getting it for 10 cents or a quarter cheaper, it's not really adding that much profit to you. And by like really being hard on the factories, like I need better pricing. I mean, to be honest with you, there's another real person on the other end of all those emails, right? And he's over there, like probably sitting in China being like, this customer's, you know, annoying. They're taking all the profit away from us. So like, you know, these items now are always going to be the last in the queue, or they might suffer from quality control issues. You know, like maybe they're like, okay, well, we'll save a quarter on each of these items by using like worser materials or so forth. So my opinion is, if you can still make good profit or good ROI on it or so forth, don't get so hung up on whether you're getting the absolute best price or not. Because, you know, if the factory's winning also and they're making a little bit money on it, they're going to be a lot nicer to you. You know, if you need to ask them some favors, they'll probably be more likely to do them and so forth. So I wouldn't get that hung up on it, is my answer. You know, once you are like ordering larger quantities, thousands at a time or a container at a time or something, you can then expect to get lower prices. But if you're like just doing your first order, just haggle with them like crazy until, you know, like your relationship's done.
I think that ties in very nicely. We have Peter Zapf of Global Sources, who obviously spends his life dealing with Chinese suppliers, you know, whether it at a trade show or setting up logistics and supply chains. And he said pretty similar things, actually. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, the quality of the relationship means, you know, that the quality of the products is going to be better. And also, like you said, and you know, whether you get put to the front or the back of the queue can make quite a major difference if they get a big order in. So yeah, I couldn't agree.
Yeah, exactly. Like if they move you to the back of the queue and that means you're going to be out of stock for a few weeks, it's like, you know, forget those few quarters you're saving, right? Instead, like you're losing like $100 a day in profit. It seems kind of silly now, right? So don't get too hung up on the price. I think like manufacturing in China, I think is actually like more expensive than most people think. You know, like labor costs there are rising every year. And these are, you know, if you would have talked to me like a few years ago before I'd ever went to China, I would never be saying these things. But after like going there, visiting factories, speaking with my suppliers, I just have a different outlook on it.
Excellent. Well, yeah, so I suppose being in China, because I know you were just in at the Canton Fair with pretty much everyone else that were into being on this podcast, actually. But so, yeah, that's interesting that actually having a feel for where they're at helps you to build a better business. Because I guess at the end of the day, in a way, if you don't have your own factory, your suppliers are a really crucial kind of part of your business, aren't they, in a way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So another question that leads on very neatly from that, you were just talking about, and we were both just talking about, you know, how long it takes to get the products and how crucial that is to have a short supply chain. Apart from the Chinese New Year's, there's a question from Ruth again. Are there any other times of year that slow down the manufacturing rate? For example, the Canton Fair.
Yeah, good question. There's no other like holidays where they're shut down for like a month. Once leading up to fourth quarter, so it's actually like at the end of the summer or beginning of fall, that's when you expect the queues in the factories to get a little bit longer because everyone's gearing up for fourth quarter. So just keep that in mind. I'd recommend, I guess it also would depend on like a seasonal item though. Like if you have a patio, lawn, and garden that's real popular in the summertime, then the queue's probably going to be long for that. Well, that's actually probably going to be terrible because it's going to be like right around like Chinese New Year, right? Yeah. I try to keep really good relationships with all my suppliers, and that's something you can just talk to them and ask them about. Don't feel like that's like a newbie question. Just keep like an open discussion with them. Like, you know, say like, I'm just planning out for this year. And they actually love to hear that. They love to hear that like you're planning for a long-term relationship for them and, you know, you're going to be placing more orders. So you can say like, okay, if I'm planning for this year, when's usually your slowest time and so forth. And yeah, that's what I'd recommend.
You're trying to find their sort of sweet spot when they haven't got so many orders to put your in. So your order's in so that you get the maximum speed of delivery, basically.
Yeah, or just know, you know, if at some point it's going to take 2 months instead of 30 days, that you can just plan for that kind of thing.
Excellent, yeah. So that it's you planning and communicating the fact that you're planning doesn't sound amateurish. In fact, it sounds the opposite. I like it. Two birds with one stone. Very elegant. Very elegant. Now, a couple of other questions about suppliers from Ruth. Is there any way of ensuring that once you differentiated a product from a supplier, say by color or design, that the supplier won't then send your differentiated product out to other customers as samples and then they'll just order the same product just with their logo on it?
Short answer is not really. You can, again, try to work with your supplier on this, say, you know, hey, like we've custom created this. We really appreciate it. You can try to get them to sign something saying that they won't use that product for another customer, which may work. But again, keep in mind, like if you like tore them apart about saving an extra 6 cents on an item and then you want them to never use this color for anyone else, they're probably not going to do it. So just keep that in mind. But it's possible. Again, just talk to them about it. You have the most negotiating power before you place your first order before you start to place larger orders. So that'd be a time to say like, you know, hey, we'd like to start ordering these 1,000 at a time. However, you know, we'd like it if, you know, you wouldn't ship this particular color or whatever to the United States. So we can be the exclusive distributor here. But even if your factory does that for you, which there's a good chance that we'd be willing to do that, there's probably like 7 other factories making the exact same product. And if someone comes to one of those other factories asking for that color, there's nothing you can do about that. So I wouldn't get too hung up on that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense as well. I'm actually, the question behind the question, I think, is like, how do I, differentiate my product, which is obviously really important. And then B, how do I keep that sort of, that, what's the word, defensive line or wall around my business and my product?
Right.
Which is a hell of a difficult one to answer, right?
Yeah. The defensive one is extremely hard to do. Like, for example, one of my products used to have, or the only ones on Amazon had plastic buckles, and the plastic buckles would always break, and it had like a whole bunch of terrible reviews. So I was the first one to start selling this product with metal buckles. And for like 6 months or a year, or probably like 6 months, I was the only one selling with metal buckles. And it was doing awesome. Long story short, today there's like 15 other people selling with metal buckles because they saw how well I was doing. And it's probably not even my factory supplying these other people with the metal buckles. You know, they're probably just asking other factories for it and so forth. But that being said, even though now I have tons of competition, for that search term, I'm the top rank. I have like 400 reviews now. Everyone else who just got into it has like 50 reviews. You know, I have like really good I have the best pictures out of anyone and so forth. So I don't think I've really seen sales decrease from it. Just being like the first one to market with a differentiated product like that, it's going to give you like at least a few months up on the competition. And during that time, you can build up, you know, your page rank and your reviews and so forth.
Great. So it's a different mentality then, in a way, if I unpick what you're saying, that basically don't go in expecting your exclusive and different product, whatever that is, to stay different for very long, because obviously everyone else will spot the opportunity. But what you've got is a bit of time. And if you use that time to build reviews and, you know, a solid listing generally and rank, that you protect it as much as you can.
Yep, that's exactly right. Because
fantastic.
Yeah, you can't really go down like for these private label items with like small modifications. You can't really go down the whole like trademark route. It's terribly expensive. It's just not practical. So yeah, just build up your listing, make your listing better. You could split test your listing to improve it a little more, and or get the best pictures, get a whole bunch of reviews and so forth. So yeah, that's what I do.
Excellent. Makes total sense. Now, another question on supplies from Ruth, and then we'll move on to some bigger picture questions. When I looked on AliExpress, just getting a few items of the products interested in, they seem quite expensive, like the same amount as similar products we're selling for on Amazon, and I'd be making quite a big loss once I import it to Amazon, including import duties, FBA fees. Do people just take this loss to test if a product sells, or is there any negotiation on price on AliExpress?
To be completely honest with you, I've never ordered anything off AliExpress before, but I'm sure it is more expensive because, there's something called like economies of scale, right? You know, if you're buying them by 1,000 instead of by the single unit, you can obviously get a lot better pricing. So I honestly don't really know the answer to this question. They might take a loss just to test a product or to like to test a theory or so forth. I guess you just have to decide if you want to try to do that or go ahead and just place an order for like 100 or a few hundred units.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I have to say, as a quick response to that, Ruth, and I placed an order for 20 on AliExpress. It's obviously a test order. I wasn't expecting to make anything but a loss. So if you go in expecting a test to cost you money, and the reason for doing a test is not to make sales, but is to get data and know, will this thing sell at a certain price point? And, and I came out seeing that the product quality was terrible, and I was very, very glad that I didn't order 200 of them. So, that's how I'd approach it for what it's worth. As you say, AliExpress, I mean, for anyone who's serious, it's probably just too low a quantity to worth bothering with the hassle, I think, was my conclusion. So on to the next question then. Would you recommend going the route of getting an agent to source products from different suppliers rather than contacting different suppliers individually through something like Alibaba? And if so, what's the best way of finding a trustworthy agent?
Yeah, that's a good question. To start, I'd probably just directly contact factories. That's what I did for my first couple years or so. I do have an agent now that works with me. He was actually just like my sales rep at one of the factories. After one Chinese New Year, he left the factory, and now he just kind of works as an agent. So that's how I found him. I already had like an established relationship with him. I don't know of like a good way to just find agents, like a good website or anything like that. So I think just to start, just contact factories off Alibaba or off global sources, and then go from there. And I think everyone that I know that like uses an agent, it's because they've met them like when they were in China, or they met them through like established relationships or whatever. I don't really like know of a good way just to straight up find them. But so for now, just contact factories directly. I mean, there are some small advantages of having an agent. Sometimes he can find me factories that aren't generally on Alibaba, and it is kind of nice having like someone on the ground sometimes, but I did it for a few years without one, and I do have to pay him a cut for every like order he places for me. So I'll just contact him directly for now if you're just starting.
Nice, clear advice. And I've got an agent that I use myself now, and again, it came through personal relationships, and he lives in the UK, so I got a chance to get to know him here.
Nice.
But he's a Chinese sort of native, but also, yeah, I have to pay him a cut as well. And so it's more about outsourcing that to an expert and not banging my head against that brick wall of China, rather than the fact that I expect to get a cheaper price or something.
Right.
So it's as long as you go in with the right mentality and know what it is you will and won't get, then I think it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. Thank you. That mirrors also what everyone has been saying to me, is always through an established relationship. It's interesting. I don't think there's a magic way of finding a trustworthy person except get to know them.
Right. Especially in China, because they value just like the relationship so much. So, yep.
So a couple of questions about Jungle Scout. First of all, thank you so much. You such fluent, simple, clear answers for this stuff is really helpful. Really, really helpful. And product research is one of those big blocks, so you've given us some great ways to get unblocked in that essential area.
Excellent.
So how do people find out more about you and about Jungle Scout?
Yeah, so you can find it at junglescout.com. We're pretty active on the blog on there. I usually write like a solid blog post every week. So it's a great place to kind of learn more about it. We've done like a pretty cool case study where we We have, they're called Jungle Sticks. They're bamboo marshmallow skewers, and you can find them on Amazon. They're doing really well. So you can read along with like that case study. That's pretty cool. So yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is probably actually just like on the comments on the blog, or if you want, you can tweet me at Mercer_Greg. And yeah, I'd be happy to respond.
Fantastic. Now, I just want to finish with some bigger picture questions. I got a very good question in from Jenny Plant, who's quite an advanced seller herself. She said, I'd be interested to hear Greg's views and thoughts on trends he's seeing on Amazon and some of the sellers that really impress him in terms of innovations or techniques that perhaps haven't yet been adopted by the masses. So essentially, the questions are, what's working well right now? What are the most successful doing right now?
Yeah, so I think one thing in common with a lot of the people that are like totally crushing it is if you can make a small improvement on an item, it works really well. So like that's what I'm doing right now with most of my products. So I'll find products that have like an average of like 3 or 3.5 star reviews, and I'll make some, you know, I'll just read the 1 and 2 star reviews, see what the problem is. And if it's something simple I can fix, then I do it. And if all your competition has like 3 and 3.5 star reviews on average, and you have like 4.5 or 5 star reviews, you can just take away like so many sales and charge a premium for it. So, you know, people are willing to pay like significantly more money. Like for instance, my product with the metal buckles, like my competition was priced at like $14.95 and I was literally selling them for $29.95. So double the price. It cost me like 50 cents extra to get metal instead of plastic. And I was like outselling all of them. Still am. So if you can make some small improvements, it works really well. Some of the other stuff that isn't as competitive now is like the more expensive or the larger, like oversized type items. So yeah, those would be good areas to look in. But I mean, that being said, there's still good opportunities in the lower price and smaller items, you know, without improvements. But yeah.
Wow. So that's a absolutely brilliant, straightforward. I'm just writing so many notes here, Greg. I'm like, wow, this is cool. Okay. Amazing. That's really, really clear. So guys, I would so advise reading these show notes for this show, because there's so much succinct, you know, answers to difficult questions. The last question is the most interesting one, I think, which is what's new and what does Greg see coming in terms of changes that we should be thinking about adopting to? So kind of future casting here. What's your prediction?
Sure. So the future casting for me, I guess if I'm looking into, you know, I'd say for like 2016 and probably 2017, there'll still be a lot of good opportunities on the .com store, you know, especially like I just said, the ones with small modifications or like a little larger, more oversized. It probably will, I mean, realistically, in the, you know, say like 2018, start to get really competitive on there. But by then, a lot of these other marketplaces like UK, like Germany, like India and Japan are going to start to mature well, where there's a lot more demand. So, you know, I see myself being in the business for a long time and probably starting to expand into other marketplaces at some point. I'm not there yet. I'm only selling it in .com, but that's probably going to be something I'll start to explore maybe like next year.
Great.
So if I'd pull out the crystal ball, that's what I'd say.
Fantastic. Well, if you need a good podcast to go to get some advice from UK sellers, then I know a guy who runs one. I'll put you in touch.
Awesome.
So, Greg, it's been fantastic to talk to you. I mean, what I really, really like is that you've got such clear, simple answers to seemingly very complex problems. Now, that doesn't mean, okay, there's more than one answer, of course, but it's good. I mean, what I really like is that you're confident and you just get on with kind of simple approaches to complex things, because you're not overcomplicating it. You're just keeping it moving, which is fantastic. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on.
Is there any other parting advice that you would have for people that we haven't already covered? What would your, if you had to sit down with your grandkids who are about to go into Amazon or kids, or, you know, and, you know, and say, you know, son, this is what you need to look out for.
Yeah. My parting advice would be, if, you know, you have been listening to the podcast for a while, you've been doing a lot of your research, you feel like you've learned a lot, and you are just like stuck with the analysis paralysis, it's time to just make a move and just get started. You know, I can tell by these questions that people had in the Facebook group and so forth that a lot of people are kind of like worried about things they don't need to be worried about, or maybe overcomplicating things. I think what you'll find is, like, once you get started, is it's not really that complex or that difficult of like a business model. It's pretty straightforward, like fairly easy. I think it's important to just always keep making steps in the right direction, right? Like, you'll hit little roadblocks along the way. Like, maybe your first supplier will drop off the face of Earth or whatever. You'll hit little roadblocks, but it's important just to keep on pushing forward. Just get you, like, you know, your first product in there up for sale, or your third product, or your 10th product, or whatever, and you'll find that it's a really awesome opportunity, and it's probably not as complex as what you think.
Brilliant. Well, I feel really motivated to go out and do a ton more product researches, which is something that I've been really, really needing to do to get my business expanding more, and I've been putting off. So I feel motivated. So I thank you for that.
All right.
And I hope that you've done the same for the listeners. So Greg, Mr. Mercer of Jungle Scout fame, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me on, Michael. We'll talk more soon.
Great. Thank you very much, Greg.
Cheers.
Wow, some superb advice and great confidence boosting, I think, there from Greg Mercer of Jungle Scout fame. What a great guy. So clear-minded, so relaxed, you know. He's living the digital nomad lifestyle, he tells me, in Barcelona. So he's like where we all want to be, really. Let's face it, he's got it taped. So what a great guy. I'm persuading him to come back to follow up on the podcast and answer more questions. So look out for that. I'll let you guys know when that happens. Meantime, don't forget to get yourself over to the Facebook group if you want to be part of this thriving and growing community, www.amazingfba.com/FB.
Hey, this is Johnny Dumas of EO Fire, and you're listening to Amazing FBA with the marvelous Michael Veazey, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. You must be prepared to ignite.
Thanks to John Lee Dumas there of Entrepreneur on Fire for giving us a wonderful audio bumper, a bit of razzmatazz there. And that was my reward for leaving an iTunes review for him. So good things happen to people who do good things for others, guys, and that can be you. So if you want to get a free email coaching from me, I've now had to restrict it to mentees only normally, because I'm very, very busy working with mentees, people I'm mentoring, and doing coaching calls and face-to-face meetings and email. So intensive work with them. But if you want to have a one-on-one email consultation with me, then all you need to do is the following. Go to the blog, amazingfba.com, find Leave an iTunes Review in the menu bar, or go to www.amazingfba.com/iTunes Review, and you'll get detailed instructions on how to do that, because Apple doesn't make it easy for some reason. So I have. Once you do that, then go to Apple and leave us a lovely review and a rating telling people a bit of what it's about, and if it's helped you, how it's helped you, that would be really great. And then just take a screenshot of that and send me the screenshot along with your email and your question that you want me to deal with in detail. If you're really lucky, I'll deal with it on the podcast as well as in email. Let me know if you want it to stay confidential, and of course I will not breathe a word to a soul. You tell me and you choose. So just a little plug there for iTunes reviews. You're getting free podcasts. You're getting access to people like Greg Mercer, Manuel Beckvar, Will Cherland, Peter Zapf of Global Sources, all the big global players, guys. So in return, all I'm asking for is a review. Is it too much? Is it? Please help me. Anyway, you know what to do, guys. Up to you. So it only remains to say, go and implement this stuff. If any part of the podcast so far has been implementable, that is really Greg Mercer's stuff, because the first thing you've got to do to get any business is to find products to sell on Amazon, and that is what he is the expert at. So if you haven't got the Jungle Scout tool yet, I do urge you to go get it. I think it's the go-to tool. There's nothing out there that quite compares with it. There are other things that will do similar things, but nothing quite as good and as slick and as well produced by somebody who obviously really knows what he's doing himself. And I think the way Greg comes across as a person, how relaxed he is, how successful he is, how well he's outsourced his life and his business, just speaks volumes for the fact that his Jungle Scout tool is, you know, from the same mentality. It's about making a difficult and repetitive task as automated as possible. So I can only urge you to go and not only get the tools, but go and follow him on the blog. I have to say, I didn't know that there was a weekly sort of blog post from Greg that I should be following up on. So that is definitely something I'll be checking out, and I'll be following the Jungle Sticks product launch sort of case study as well. So I'd strongly advise you to do the same, because anything you can learn from this man, in my opinion, is worth learning. So coming up, Will Cherland interview next. We've got Manuel Beckvar scheduled as well, and very many other wonderful people, as well as thoughts from yours truly. So keep listening, keep taking notes, keep taking action, guys, and then look back on your actions and learn from it. It's the only real learning comes from your own experience ultimately. So get out and take action. Meanwhile, have fun, good hunting, speak to you in the next podcast.